Welcome to the Voice of MPE, the official podcast of Merchant Payments Ecosystem, Europe's largest merchant payments conference. Today, we are at the 16th annual MPE conference, MPE 2023. This podcast brings you interviews with payment industry leaders and professionals from the entire payment world. For more information, head over to www.merchantpaymentsecosystem.com. Today we discuss machine learning and data validation. Which solutions are helping? Janusz Tiemko from Exoplay, the moderator of this session, spoke with Hubert O'Donoghue from AIB Merchant Services, Stephen Renwick from Telores, Matthias Jakitowicz from Blue Media Autoplay, and Marco Conte from Congrify. Learn more about the data economy in embedded finance.
Well, I suppose one thing that Mr. Dorsey's companies have in common, Twitter and Block, is that they seem to have a lot of users, non-users, or identical users.
Yeah, it's exactly the same. And I think this is the problem that we sometimes see with the identity resolution is a lot of people are a bit like this. If they don't look for it, they won't realize a problem. And so many companies, if you forget the financial sector for a second, you're looking like social media. One of their most important KPIs is how many unique users do we actually have? And if they did this matching and realized that 20% of their user base is actually related to someone else, then they have to report it. And suddenly they're literally losing money because they're valuing their company based on expected advertising revenue per user. And we see this in normal traditional businesses as well. We know a very big transport company that has a very good identity team, but they will not do identity resolution because the actual whole unit's KPI is how many customers do we have? And if they suddenly knock that off by 20%, they would actually be losing their incentives.
Okay, maybe we'll introduce now in a bit more detail our panelists. Marco, if you want to say a few words about yourself and your company.
10 years in payments. Basically started to work with payment data 10 years ago while I was working for Western Union. You were showing before graph databases and links. That's something that 10 years ago was already there. And especially for money transfer, you can imagine how important is that to go to 5-6 level of connections to see people. Then I worked for Wirecard as well, 3 years and a half, where there was a lot of data as well besides, you know, the financial crash and that's other story. But the machine was up and running. And 3 years consulting many companies on those data, on those topics, actually. And last summer, I think one of the worst periods of the last 10 years to launch a startup, I launched my own startup called Congrify, which basically where we have as a mission to unlock payment intelligence for both merchants and actually fintechs and payment service providers, because we see that payment service providers as well are struggling handling all those data and making sense of those data, creating insights. And right now we run the first customers. We have more than 300 million transactions and events already on our platform. The team is based between Munich, Germany and Milan, Italy. So that's about us.
Matteo.
Hi, hello. Hello. Matthew over here from Blue Media and Autopay. This is based on Poland company, but we are present also in Germany, right now also in Austria. And we have also one company in US. So yeah, it's start to be quite a big company. And in really short term, this is kind of the company that have processing, acquiring, money transfer, and identity solutions plus open banking. Of course, I'm really with you with this with the open banking. And also part of the mobility. So the payments in mobility, we see over here the huge potential. And right now we're starting the new product, new journey with the data. And about myself, I'm in payment sector for 1 year. So I would say rookie. But on the data sector for 15 years and with the insurance sector for about 10 years. So yeah, this is a different perspective right now for me, but as chief data officer, I have some knowledge about this GDPR stuff and this kind of thing. But I still believe that most important thing is how to use the data and how to make them work for us. So yeah, this is...
So maybe first question to Marco, but I see, you know, through all of the comments so far, we can see that there's a question of sharing and partnership. And one of the questions on screen was as well, you know, schemes, should they give more data? You know, do we need a different approach in our industry in terms of the way we approach, you know, users and KYC and fraud and ID and checks? And, you know, maybe you can start, Marco, but it seems that this is a question for all of us.
Yeah. Yeah, I can start. I mean, sure, this is a great question. And we should actually make another question. What is the role of the schemes in industry? I mean, like, do they have to do literally everything? And at a certain point, if they need to share all those informations, then basically they should stop the frauds themselves and become like another step after the issuer. So take decisions on behalf of issuers and others and other parties. The question is, and as well, what you were saying as well, like where the data are, right? And how much the schemes are seeing. I mean, the schemes are not having all the data that the merchant is having. So if you have customer related data, is this something that MasterCard and Visa and the others are seeing? Well, generally, no. Sure, with 3D Secure 2, there is a bunch of additional data that you are sending during an authentication request, 150 data points that issuers never seen before. Because, I mean, during an authorization, there is no email address. It was sent in the past. Now there is an email address that can be sent during authentication. So the question, I mean, my personal point of view, sure, they should educate about what they see, if they see any specific partners and other things. But I guess they should really work with the acquirers and the payment gateways as well. Let's not forget that the payment gateways are the technical point of entry to guide them sometimes. But having worked for several payment service providers and acquirers over time, I mean, you have hundreds of people which are working on risk and frauds, merchant risk monitoring. I mean, like, I don't know how much more can be shared, even though there is already some sessions between schemes and acquirers about those topics.
I think there's a lot more that can be done. The card schemes, create the analogy, are the... They're like the post office. It's a massive clearing center for everything that is card based, and so there are enormous amounts of data. There has been a tendency of late for, like a lot of other companies, for the card schemes to wish to monetize some of what they have and to charge significant fees for sharing the data, which. I'm not sure is a great development for the industry, because fraud is a huge issue. The more that the fraud data can be shared and distributed to the licensees and, you know, other counterparties, the better an environment we will have for electronic payments as they evolve over the coming years.
Do we think that we should be sharing much more non-anonymized data in terms of, let's say, fraud and ID between ourselves? Because then we get back to the issue of legality, and we get back to the issue of, you know, personal data. But, you know, if we see fraud rates per card, per address, per user, should that be going from the scheme to all of the other acquirers that might deal with that data in a given country?
I think that's ideally, yes, from a fraud prevention point of view, but from a data privacy point of view, it's never going to happen. So when we were in the credit bureau, we tried really hard to get everyone to share data with us, negative and positive data about fraud, so we could use that as a basis for fraud detection. From a data point of view, it would have been perfect. It would have worked really well, and we would have really hit fraud levels. But from data protection, it's possible. But once the commercial people realize that you've got to tell people we're going to store and centralize your data for fraud prevention, then you've got no chance, because you're going to hit conversion rates on your checkouts, and people will tolerate a certain level of fraud if the opposite of doing that is affecting their conversion rates. I mean, looking at the question there, is there such a thing as truly anonymized data? Joining the dots looks like a lot of use of PII. I mean, it is by definition using PII. What we're doing is working with companies' internal data. So this is the data that you would have sitting in your customer database anyway. It's just normally when it's sitting there, it's unlinked. You're not able to join the dots. So you've got it anyway. This is just about making better use of it. You can obviously you can anonymize data and you can theoretically use it. I mean, technically speaking, if you anonymize data, you'll very often create hashes from it. You can match two hashes together to say, this is the same email address.
Yeah.
But then that's not actually the problem we're tackling. Because if there's, in the example I gave, there's one or two characters different, that becomes a different hash and you cannot match them together. So for what we do, anonymized data doesn't work. But yeah.
And for most companies, before we go to for most companies, they have so much internal data that they're not really doing anything with,
yeah,
that they should cover a large proportion of the issues that they have around fraud and ID and KYC, just if they go historically and then check every new record.
If they just made better use of the data they've already got, they would tackle a lot of the problems. Well, we're not, you know, you mentioned that at the beginning that a lot of people here are talking about artificial intelligence. We're not even talking about artificial intelligence. We're just talking about making the connection with data. And the difficulty is just doing this at scale. This is the sort of thing that when you're trying to do it, when you've got tens of millions of customers or just hundreds of thousands of customers, it makes databases crash. And that's why people don't do it. You need engineers that are there to kind of make these things work and continuously tweak them. And people can't be bothered doing that. It's difficult and expensive.
Yeah, no, I think just on the point of anonymization, I think there is a principle in the data protection literature which distinguishes anonymization and pseudonymization. And anonymizing meaning that anything that identifies the person is rendered almost unreadable, so that you cannot get back to the original data. Whereas in pseudonymization, it's kind of tokenized, and that's what we accomplished. And I think it shows the distinction between using data for analytical purposes, as we have done, versus fraud, which is rather more specific to the individual. So I think that's an important distinction as we look to leverage data for, for commercial purposes. Sorry for interrupting.
So as a data practitioner, as opposed to a payments practitioner, maybe you can address some of these issues.
Okay, so I need to disrupt it a little bit. So let's put the disruption inside of this discussion, just to have one single point of view from the customer's point of view. Because we talk about data, we talk about who we have in our databases. But from the customer's point of view, we know from the telcos that for, 5 zlotys, so it's about 1 euro, customers share their data without any problem. They consent. And if we understand that the data that we have in our data systems are not our data, they are our customers' data, and we are just processing them, and then we can do such a lot of things, asking our customers about, do you agree on it? And if we ask, for example, do you agree to be as a fraudster in these databases? Always everyone will say, no, I'm not a fraudster, even if I am. Yep. So this is a simple case. But if you ask the positive question, and we have with BNPL this kind of use case. So we ask the question, would you like to share your bill payments data? Because we've got the bill payments data as a Blue Media. With your BNPL, you just want to buy something. And they say, yes, I would like to share this data. Why? Because this is something that that I own this information as a customer. So from this point of view, I would say there is a huge, huge difference. So how to make those data work? Just, I would say, ask the customers what they would like to have. And if we ask the customers what they would like to have, it is, of course, the top line and the bottom line working. So do we talk about revenue, or do we talk about sales and new streams or of the cash? And if we talk about new streams of the cash for our businesses, I think that this is analytic part that you showed, Hubert, at the very beginning. This is something really great. And let's add to it one more thing. So not the flyers, but something more. And we talk about what we can do with this something more, and how we can federate the data between the platform that we have as a Blue Media. We've got about 50% of the household in Poland. So how we can share those data and federate those data with our merchants, and then build hyper-personalized ads, hyper-personalized service. And of course, if we have this data, we've got this environment, then fraud prevention starting to be really, really simple. And in GDPR part, of course, GDPR is, I would say, this is obstacle, but this is also something really good if you use it in the right way. Mm-hmm. So if you forget for 1 minute that we own the data, but the data is our customers' data, then if you ask those customers, give them rewards for this data, you can work with the customers on this data and build new revenue streams, really, on a different use case.
Anyone else see monetization? I mean, Mazurz makes a good question. I mean, in Poland, all the mobile operators give you a small discount for marketing data. And I made that same mistake, and then I take 20 calls about, do I want solar panels on my roof?
And
I haven't got around to cancelling it. It's true. But then, luckily, Samsung and other phone providers always say spam calls. So most of these spam calls, yeah, they are flagged. But it's true. What is the monetization value? How much do you need to pay a customer to actually
sell their data? There's an interesting question, actually, are people prepared to pay for it? And I think the answer is maybe. I think, first of all, they have to see what benefits it can bring. So if I go to our example, we have rolled it out on the basis that customers, our clients, can avail of it as part of the service. And in a way, because of the benefits that it has brought to our business in terms of reducing attrition, we have monetized it. On the other hand, my own view is that services extended to people that they don't pay for, or they don't appreciate them. So I would see in the future, as the base of customers grow, that we will move to charge for the data. I'm not going to pretend for one moment that in rolling out a product like ours that it's easy. Because as the questioner said, you know, how do you persuade customers that there is value add in this? Because, you know, initial reactions can be, well, so what, you know, or with a lot of merchants, they say, look, I'm running this business. I know what's going on here. And, you know, to use some of the examples that I've shown, in some cases, the data that we provide to them can reveal to them that they actually don't know what's going on in their business. So I think that's you know, the use of data analytics, I would say, in the world today is still in its infancy. And, you know, those of us who are, I suppose, privileged to work in this sector and deal with these enormous amounts of data, you know, I suppose have a duty to try to demonstrate the power of what it can do.
But I think the question is, we talk about like customers, consumers giving data, consent, paying, I will never pay for this, I think, or get discounts. But we forget one thing, I mean, like accessibility to data. So that's what you were saying, like data are a bit of everywhere. Sometimes they're not there. Just imagine if you are an international merchant and you are in 20 different countries, you got PayPal, you got PSP number one, PSP number two, buy now, pay later. You need to go and grab all those data. And data schemes are different and there's complexity and you need data engineers. I mean, if you are a one acquirer stop, fine. I give you the things and give you the analytics. But on all the other cases, there is a lot of effort to really understand what you can do with those data. So either you come and somebody, you know, gives you one solution that aggregates everything and prepares this for you, or it's efforts. The other payment service provider with us in the US, the huge one, the large one, estimates that to build those data pipelines, merchants spend $800,000.
Yeah. And paradoxically, if we talk about one more time, from time to time, I'm not only on PowerPoint slides, but also doing something in the code, probably like you guys. And if we think about the data model, that in fact, all the transactions have three or four most important things. So where, who, merchant, quote, and channel. And based on only those four or five information, you can build such a huge information about this customer, because you link different kind of information about it. So, for example, we all know Cambridge Analytica, and they say, okay, we've got 5,000 data points about the customers, in US citizens. When we start grabbing our own data, so maybe not our own, but the merchant data and working on it, we realize that about single customer, we don't have so much information. About single merchant, we don't have many information. But if we combine those information on the platform, on creating digital twins, then we've got about 7,000 different data points about their behavior, about who they are, where they are. And this analytics is also, of course, only the analytics. But then you can start using it in different use cases, like upgrading your so potential new customers. So this is the new flyers, I would say, or prevent fraud, or maintain those customers that are right now in your portfolio. So I know that there's always a huge effort, but what we simplified and we really believe, and really let's discuss it in after the panel, because if we simplify the most important points, then we can build really federated data, 5 information, and it's enough.
I think something we've got to keep in mind is even if everything is legal, there's always a public perception which might be different from how things are actually legally viewed. In Germany, well, I come from a credit bureau background, so data is the most important thing, and the holy grail of data is data submitted by the consumers themselves. In Germany, the big credit bureau, which I didn't work for, is the Schufa. Everybody knows if you live in Germany, you have to have a Schufa report. And the Schufa did something quite innovative recently. They said, we're going to use open banking to connect your bank accounts, and then you can enrich your credit profile. I mean, you would have such a better, richer credit profile if you had.
Really wanted that.
But they got absolutely slayed in the press. I mean, there was literally a documentary talking about how this predatory credit bureau was trying to hoover up people's data, but it was obviously opt-in. It was obviously going to be used to make your credit profile better if you have a thin credit profile. So although it's completely legal, although it kind of obviously would have been in the consumer's best interest, the public perception was so bad, credit bureau hoovering up data, that they got absolutely slammed, and I think they shut it down.
I think that with the open banking, there is only one small case. It is like entering to your bedroom. If you give all the information in account information system, you show all your things that you do, everything. So probably this is
have a really good reason. Exactly. So having, let's say, exactly, the bank open up account information history of, let's say, 5 years for someone to siphon in, and maybe it's buy now, pay later or credit, and for them to churn. I mean, I'd never feel comfortable in them going 5 years back and checking every single thing you've done. It'd have to be a huge
every
benefit
mistake of your life.
Yeah. Otherwise, you can't get the credit, then you would argue it's worthwhile.
And then it's a case of how desperate you are. I mean, we're kind of running out of time, but yesterday in the whole issues around fraud and metaverse, it seems that we're moving to, if you know who the person is, and then, you know, half the problem goes away. When we have a European ID scheme, is all these issues of 7 emails, 7 users, 20 addresses, 20 users, people, you know, is that all going to go away when a European ID scheme works? And everyone in Europe will know that you are you, and they make a decision based on your history with me as a seller. Will this solve 90% of our problems?
Well, I'd say good luck with trying to get a unified ID system in Europe. Like, look how long it took us to get a single currency.
Brussels, they still think that they can get this done.
Not 80% problems.
I would expect, I mean, like, new IDs, new fraudsters trying to fake IDs. I mean, that's what's going to happen.
I've seen it in certain South American markets where they use biometric IDs for online transactions that actually they have surprisingly low fraud levels. So if that actually happens, then yeah, it will make
sense. We'll see what it's actually going to be, how it's going to really work, and how the take-up is going to be across Europe. So we're out of time. So thank you very much, gentlemen. I hope you enjoyed the discussion. And I think, you know, 2 takeaways I have. One, there's so much data internally that everyone has that they should be utilizing in a better manner, whether it's for fraud, for checking, or for monetization. And the other thing is the question of, you know, how far we can go in partnering, you know, up to the legal legal abilities to take more use of our data. So thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for tuning in to the official MPE podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe to the show and check other video interviews with other industry leaders on our YouTube channel. For more content, follow Merchant Payments Ecosystem on LinkedIn and Twitter. Don't miss out on our Positivity magazine, and remember to subscribe to the MPE newsletter at www.merchantpaymentsecosystem.com.